I'll go ahead and call the Common Council meeting to order. It's March 26th at 7:01 p.m. Let's please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
We go.
Here.
Warren.
Here.
Romine.
Here.
Hanrod.
Here.
Simpson.
Here.
In front of you are the minutes from our last meeting, which was on March 12th. I did find two different things on the first page of the minutes under Parks Department in the first line, Aquatics Facility Task Force. I'm not sure if that's specifically what he said, but I just want to make a clarification that's what he's talking about. And then on, let's see, page 2, 3, sorry, I didn't have the pages written down. I think on page 4, I think of the minutes, it's resolution 2013-12, which was the IMPA commissioner appointment. We actually have two motions and two seconds, so I don't know which one it is. There's kind of two lines worth of that. So I don't know if there was... Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. I read that incorrectly. It was a by title only, and then it was a motion to approve. So, okay, so I apologize. I'll take that, strike that one. Any other changes or corrections need to take place with the council? Hearing none, can I have a motion?
Make a motion we approve the minutes as presented with the two changes you recommended.
One change.
One change.
Yeah, that's good.
Second.
Motioned by Ben, seconded by Nicole. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Minutes have been approved. Okay, we'll then move to the swearing in of our new police officer. Who wants to lead that? Tim?
So this is John Stoffel, a new police officer. We're excited to have him here. He's got a lot of family and friends here with him. So John, if you want to step over here. Captain? This is Rosie Fuller. She's the clerk treasurer, and she'll be swearing in.
I, John Stoffel.
I, John Stoffel.
Swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
Swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the State of Indiana.
The Constitution of the State of Indiana.
And that I will faithfully and impartially.
And I will faithfully and impartially.
Discharge my duties as a police officer.
Discharge my duties as a police officer.
Of the City of Columbia City.
Of the City of Columbia City.
According to the law.
According to the law.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you. Thank
you. Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations. Okay. Richard, we will transition to the EDC annual report. I don't know if it was Dick, was Alan supposed to be?
Okay.
Okay, would you like to say a couple of things? That'd be great. Thank you.
First of all, my name is Dick Buchanan, and I'm the city representative for the EDC of Whitley County. The mayor appointed me at the beginning of the year. My job is to obviously represent the city of Columbia City. The EDC is basically, for people who are not real familiar with it, we're the salesperson for Columbia City, for South Hill, Cherubusco, and Larwell. We try to get business into town. A lot of our business that we deal with is confidential for obvious reasons, that if a big manufacturer is coming in and they need land, we just can't come out and say that Ford Motor Company is coming in and wants to buy 400 acres of ground, and all of a sudden that $8,000 ground becomes $28,000, and we don't get anything. Plus, to get the hopes up for people, it's a very interesting program. I keep the mayor, I think, pretty well informed as to what's going on. There are no secrets. If anybody has any ideas or any possible business opportunities that might come over coffee or just being around town, let me know or let the mayor know. He'll get a hold of us. We'll look into it. In fact, our last one that we had is Dunham, where we were working with the people with Kroger, and it just wound up, excuse me, I think the mayor called myself and Jeff in about a half hour. We were meeting over towards Fort Wayne with the people. That's how quick things happen. Other things take forever. They're different programs that are out throughout the state. We, as a board, send Alan Teo out to those. That's where he gets leads. That's why it's really important to be shovel-ready. Shovel-ready means that if somebody wants to build a plant or a building, they have the sewer, they have everything ready to go, so we're not trying to put something off for 2 years, get it zoned. It's ready to go so they can start digging their dirt. So Alan is here now, so he has all the information about the annual report.
Okay.
Alan?
Well, now you all know that sometimes the back-to-back South Whitley Columbia City presentations don't work out well. And you kind of cut it a little. You know, they were trying to get through a lot tonight. I have handouts. Always have handouts. So appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this evening. I understand the agenda is full, so I'll be brief. I want to provide a recap of our 2012 work as we continue into the new 2013, I guess it's still the new year. Also a recap of our strategic plan, and then explain a bit about our work plan for 2013 and see what kind of questions everyone might have about what we have underway. A lot of the work we have for 2013, I will share, a little familiar. We're really continuing all of our initiatives and activities, and so our focus now is just sustaining what we're doing and working on behalf of all the communities in Whitley County. So that's it. So if I could, the first document, the first handout, if you will, is the Talking Points document. We produce this quarterly as a way to collect information about initiatives that we're working on or announcements. You'll see it mentions new board members, Jill Perlow from NIPSCO and Pat O'Connor from Whitley County Consolidated Schools. Also talks about the 80-20 announcement, the Kerr Real Estate announcement, and the SDI project. Of course, we had a more detailed announcement with the governor at SDI, 80-20 a few weeks ago. And you'll see in the bottom left corner summary of our 2012 activity. So these are announcements, either new or expanding companies in Whitley County, job pledges, and investment commitments. Of course, you know, these are nice numbers to look at, and we're always positive from year to year, even coming out of the recession. But you know, our activity really is more focused on how active are we or how effective are we at reaching companies in the area. We track about 60 to 70 companies that are in Whitley County of any size. So typically meet with 40 to 50 per year. Last year was 49, which that turned into 26 different referrals to some other economic development partner. Could be working with the city, with the county, with the state EDC, with utilities. And of that, then we had 9 different announcements of some kind of expansion or a new project or some kind of development. So about a 20% conversion rate from the outreach we have with companies in Whitley County to some kind of project we can announce with them. So very pleased at our ongoing efforts. Certainly a team effort. We work together with a number of partners from the city
the county and regional and state level, even the federal level. So I guess example of a regional initiative, on the back you have the Your Story Made Here website, a link to the website. This website includes a number of different videos. I've shared this with some of you before, but the intent is to provide something that talks about the quality of life in Northeast Indiana, what it's like to live throughout the Northeast Indiana region, and perhaps provide a resource that companies can use to attract in new employees or to welcome customers or others to the region. And so it's pretty nice material, and it actually focuses quite a bit on Whitley County. We're looking to incorporate some of that in our own website going forward. So that's a real quick snapshot of our 2012 activity. I also have a recap of our strategic planning process. I know I've explained this before, but this is a one-pager we put together to really highlight the entire process. I appreciate everyone's involvement in that project. It was our first ever strategic plan in our 20-year history, and I think it set a good course for us, but really more than anything, just validating the work we already had underway was what people, what stakeholders, elected officials, business leaders, others expected of us. We tightened up our mission statement. We added a vision statement. The EDC is the focal point, or aspires to be the focal point for planning, building, and equipping businesses. So really, from a startup business, an entrepreneur with an idea on a bar napkin, all the way to our largest employers, we want to work with anyone who wants to invest in Whitley County and create and retain jobs here. And it's not up to the business owner or manager to know the acronyms of the programs we work with or who to call, but call the EDC, and we will help put together the right team for every project. And that's our ongoing commitment. And you can see we added in four goals for the organization. We have a pretty broad work plan, with a number of different initiatives, but whether it's me working with existing clients in the county, whether it's Lori Shipman working with our communities on community development initiatives, if it's Bruce Stack and Scott Goskowitz working with small business entrepreneurs, we're all working toward sustainability, leadership, innovation, and connectedness in our activities. So you can see those goals laid out, and it provides a way for us to focus all of our efforts. I do want to touch on a list of six challenges and opportunities that were described in the report. The strategic plan is about a 30-page, 35-page report. It's at our website. I can print copies, but I will print them on request. Otherwise, they look good on an iPad. The opportunities and challenges we listed or we identified, number one and two, we're in the same boat with the rest of the counties in Northeast Indiana. We've seen that we need to really focus and work hard to sustain our quality of life and to sustain a highly educated and skilled workforce that will be able to pursue higher-paying jobs, create more wealth in our communities, and then support the quality of life. It's a virtuous cycle, is what we're hoping. There's a lot of good momentum, I think, at the regional level with some initiatives underway. We're the connector to the regional partnership, to the Vision 2020 efforts, and so we think we're on the right track, but it's going to be a long-term undertaking, and it's something we're fully committed to, is keeping a focus on those kind of activities. Number three, we had a site selector from Phoenix, Arizona visit, do an assessment of our organization, of our community, and notice that we really don't have a lot of inventory as far as available buildings in Whitley County. If one or two of the current buildings available came off the market, we'd be really hard-pressed to work with new clients. So recommended pursuing a spec building project, speculative building project. Number four, focusing on quality of place. This was identified early in our project that there is an opportunity to work on what is the vision for Whitley County. I think South Whitley is taking some of this on with their Whitley on the Move project, but we identified and clarified early that wasn't our goal. We don't develop, keep, maintain the vision of what Whitley County wants to be, or Columbia City and other towns in the county. That's a separate project. We're happy to help facilitate that. But our goal is to be the most effective economic development organization we can be, not to set the vision for what the community is going to be. And then number five and six, John Stafford, our facilitator, was upfront with us. We need to work hard to retain our staff and to sustain our activities. We're very close on the funding it's going to take to sustain our work. And it's an ongoing effort to try to keep and retain our staff and build our staff capabilities. We have a a very unique staff structure with two full-time, two part-time, and two contract employees. Probably the most skilled team of any EDC staff in Northern Indiana. So it's an ongoing effort, though, to make sure we work with our team members and we're responsive to their needs. And if folks, you know, do find other opportunities that we can continue to maintain the capabilities we have at the EDC, really to work on behalf of all the communities in Whitley County. So that's our focus. We know the challenge, and we're hard at it. Any questions on the year in review or the strategic planning project? Okay, let me run through briefly the 2013 work plan. Again, a lot of this will look familiar because we're continuing. We're now in the work of continuing initiatives rather than trying to add more. Business attraction, I continue to work with the regional partnership and the state EDC, the IEDC, on very focused lead opportunities, lead generation. Really, as far as outbound lead generation, the medical device sector, how can we try to beef up our supply chain capabilities in medical device? For inbound leads coming from the state and from regional partnership, again, we do have good industrial parks in the county that we can see, we can propose for projects. We have a couple of available buildings, but we need to continue to work on our product to make sure that we do have, like I say, the sites and buildings companies are looking for that we can respond to as opportunities come through. Ongoing outreach and project management with our business retention and expansion. Again, my goal is to meet with 40 to 50 companies a year. We're putting together a team that's helping that effort to get out to perhaps more companies by involving a mix of board members, elected officials, to help meet with companies. And we hope to expand that effort over the next year. Our community development, Lori Shipman, our community development coordinator, again, provides a unique skill set that no other EDC in this region has. We're launching an agribusiness initiative. I think I mentioned this before. We think we're well positioned to participate in some state level initiatives that are coming together through the Lieutenant Governor's Office and Bio Crossroads, looking at how do we support food and agricultural innovation. We've got a lot of both in our backyard. And we're also working on the Indiana Main Street program to provide a common kind of home for the Indiana Main Street designation for Columbia City and also support for Cherubusco and South Whitley. If there are things that, we can, services or support we can provide in South Whitley and then, take that and apply the same expertise in Cherubusco or Columbia City, we want to make sure that we're all working together and that we're supporting the communities throughout the county. Legislative advocacy, we're a member of the Northeast Indiana Regional Chamber, which is an advocacy group that's very unique and distinct from anything else in the state. It's not a member of the state chamber. They're not aligned with the state chamber. But we have seen that working with the regional chamber, we can be very effective in working with the state house. Kathy Hewer has actually taken the lead on all four of the bills I've mentioned here. 1170 is a training-related bill. 1412 is related to incentive for medical device companies that pay the excise tax. 1413 is an R&D sales tax exemption. And 1462, that language was put back into a Senate bill. It would allow us to create a rural entrepreneurship area and collect state income taxes to fund our entrepreneurship activities. So that would be very exciting to have that tool available. But again, because of the work we've put in place, we're ready to use something like that. And again, expand our programs here in Whitley County. Our marketing communications, we continue to put together, marketing materials that are both for stakeholders in Whitley County as well as for business owners and managers that are here and perhaps or will be new to Whitley County. And I mentioned we're in the process of updating videos. We're looking at doing some more case studies of companies we've worked with and updating our website. So we continue to add what we have available in our toolbox to support, again, both informing and educating stakeholders within Whitley County as well as reaching folks outside of the community. Redevelopment, I mentioned a couple of county redevelopment projects. Gateway Park, we've just about completed the improvements to Gateway Park working with the County Redevelopment Commission. We're evaluating a spec building program. Of looking at whether or not to go forward with a building in the TIF area, US 30 corridor, but also working with Columbia City Redevelopment Commission on a couple projects Hoping to put together a handout listing all the tools that the commission has available and look at some other downtown redevelopment. So a lot, you know, to work on, and redevelopment certainly provides, I think, a good opportunity to support the reuse, redevelopment of existing properties, and again, investing in the community and the quality of life. And then finally, our Small Business and Entrepreneurship Initiative. I think we're still the only EDC in Northeast Indiana that hosts a Small Business and Entrepreneurship Initiative, and we continue to support the Green Light Program, which is our front door program. We've launched a Market Maker program for product and market development, and it has 9 clients, actually 11 now, we added 2 more. And we're launching a mentoring program. George Frump from County Commission is going to serve as our entrepreneur residence and help us lead a mentoring program. We're relaunching our advisory board and looking to replace our new ventures program with a new program called Ice House, also through the Kauffman Foundation in conjunction with Ivy Tech, that would provide a mix of webinar-based and in-person instruction. So, you gotta take a breath. That is our work plan for the year in a nutshell. I want to make sure to give a brief update, overview of that, before we got too much further in the year. But, you know, this plus, you know, other duties as assigned from the city and the county and the towns, you know, we goal is to provide a very comprehensive economic development program, you know, meet the needs of stakeholders throughout the county, and appreciate the opportunity to do so. I mean, we have great leadership at the board level with Dick Buchanan serving as our city council representative to the board, and we've got a good team in place. So should be proud of the EDC and the work that is going on, but certainly always exciting and always for the benefit of the community.
Questions of Alan? Well, thank you, Alan.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your update. And
hey, I'm happy to provide any updates. I know I've got a busy agenda, so I want to be brief.
I appreciate you coming in, and Dick, appreciate your representing the city on that board. I think we've made some really good progress in regards to moving our county forward, moving Columbia City forward in economic development. You know, I know that Alan and Jeff have worked very closely on a couple of different things. Actually, lately, we've had a lot of influx lately, which is a great thing, but appreciate the collaboration that continues to happen between the two of you, and every once in a while when I get into the picture. So, okay, thank you, Alan.
Very good, thank you.
Appreciate it, thank you. Okay. We'll move to the next thing on our agenda, and that's Ordinance 2013-13, which has to do with the removal of the water utility from the jurisdiction of the IURC. I first want to introduce Buzz Crone, who is actually our financial consultant and has been for how many years, Buzz?
It's been a while. Since the early 90s, I think.
Okay. And Buzz takes care of our water and electric utilities, as in the quarterly and annual financial reports. Because of his background, he's also worked in other communities that have opted out of the IURC. So I'll just kind of, I mean, you were in on the last rate case, so you can give all the details about how much it cost us.
I think this
for that.
Is probably at least the third time that this has gotten to at least this stage of consideration, and with regard to opting out of the commission, and again, this is not a session here to, you know, badmouth the IURC by any means. They do a great job, and for investor-owned utilities that have profit motives, mm-hmm. that are in business to earn dividends for shareholders and all kinds of profit-oriented motives, it's a necessary requirement. But back in the early 80s, the legislature made it simpler for municipalities to remove themselves from the commission's jurisdiction. And since that time, I just was kind of refreshing some of my statistics on that. About once a year, the commission will update and publish a report that shows how many municipal utilities have withdrawn. There's over 400 of the, I'm not sure how many water utilities there are in the state. I'm thinking these are just the municipals. I think there's probably about 450 or so 400 of them have opted out. With the municipal electrics, there's only 72 of those. Those are easier to track. 65 of those have opted out. I think there's 40-some REMCs that have opted out. And again, it becomes a kind of a bureaucratic expense that in our case, in Columbia City's case, I don't think the cost has been worth the benefit. I look back at the 2006 rate case where we had a project in the pipeline at that time, and I don't remember all the dates in that, but I know we asked for a rate that would have taken our average bill up to $20.50, and we got a little over $19.50. You know, so is all that cost worth a dollar? You know, and from the city standpoint, we got cut short a dollar. From the commission standpoint, you know, they have a different point of view. The utility consumer counselor is always the adversary, trying to beat down utility rate increases, and that's not a bad thing. But again, our situation where we're a not-for-profit entity, we're in our ratepayers and citizens are in fact the shareholders, and any retained earnings just go to rate stabilization in the future and help keep those costs down on a long-term basis. They're not being funneled out to shareholder dividends. This last one, we filed our case at the end of 2011, and we were probably ready. We could have done that sooner, but because of the election year and so forth, Mayor Fleck wanted to wait until all that was over. So we filed in early December, right at the end of November of 2011, and we finally got our order at the end of July 31st of 2012. And unfortunately, we needed those rates probably 6 months before we even got filed, but that eight-month lag of getting through the regulatory commission, there was a lost opportunity cost there, helping Jeff with his econ class here. He was talking about opportunity costs, and that's our biggest cost without question, because we didn't get everything we needed back in 2006, but then by the time we got to 11, we've had some, you know, for a number of reasons, we needed to raise about $40,000 a month more income, and that eight-month lag cost us about $320,000. The cost of doing the studies, the baseline studies, is about the same. I don't know if we put a little PowerPoint together just to have as a reference to kind of measure where the differences are.
I threw it in the Dropbox, but yeah. I'm not sure. Well, now it's coming. I was going to say it wasn't coming up earlier for me, but now it's in there. So
the timeline for a regular rate study might be 30 to 45 days. That baseline information is going to be the same whether you're in a regulated environment or an unregulated environment. And then to go through the council adoption, that's usually a 30-day process because you introduce an ordinance at one meeting, then you have to advertise and hold a public hearing, and then the council has to pass on that. And the Board of Works is sort of in between. They're monitoring this and driving those initiatives forward. But then we get into the regulatory lag part where you know, to prepare and file your rate case might take another 30 to 60 days to get all the exhibits and documents in order and file those. In this particular case, we tried to do the abbreviated proceedings where we were using what they call their small utility forms. And, you know, theoretically that's supposed to streamline things. I don't know that it really did.
Well, I can remember sitting in. I mean, of course, I was new to the office at that point. I remember sitting in a phone conference with you, and Mike had the packet in front of him, and it was. How many pages? Well, I mean, it was a pretty thick packet
it's
for
about
a
an inch thick,
short,
yeah.
You know, a small utility filing. It was incredible. I mean, it was almost like they just copied what the commercial, you know, investor-owned is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Investor-owned utilities,
yeah.
Or Dukes and things like that. I mean, it was almost like they copied that form and gave it to municipal utilities to fill out. A lot of the questions we couldn't even answer. I mean,
from my perspective, it's almost easier to do a regular filing, but then there's a lot more work for the attorneys and so forth. And so I think overall the small U is probably, you know, when it's available, that's the cost-effective way to go. Mm-hmm. But then normally it takes 90 to 180 days then for the IURC to go through their review. And the OUCC is the one that really does the scrutiny review, and there's a lot of dialogue going back and forth, data requests, things of that nature, and then you get to the point where you negotiate what you hope to settle on. And in this last case, we were asking for an average bill of $26.74, and we came out with a $26 rate. You know, if I was an investor-owned utility, I'd say, hey, we did pretty good, because, you know, they're always trying to beat that number down, but we're not. We felt like we got shortchanged 75 cents. But the 8 months that it took, times $40,000 a month in lost revenues, we got pretty upside down in the water department. Fortunately, you were able to, Rosie does her magic back there and juggles the funds and makes it all work out. But it really put us in a real working capital predicament. In fact, I know the mayor sent some heartfelt letters to the commission.
That I did.
In the month or two leading up to finally getting the order approved. And I did get a personal phone call from the judge basically apologizing that, they felt badly about how long it took to get that through the system. But then you get everybody pointing fingers everywhere whose fault that was. But
the typical bureaucracy.
Yeah, so I think that, and this is not a new revelation for Columbia City Utilities. I know at one point they did go to a referendum, but the way referendums are worded, they just never seem to work. They're doomed to fail when you have to go to a referendum on these things. And I think one other time it was pushed forward, but then it looked like it was going to get pushed to referendum, so it got scrapped at that point. After these last couple encounters and two different mayors now coming to that same thought, you know, maybe the time is right now to try to do this once and for all. And it doesn't mean that we're unregulated completely, because there's still enormous amount of regulation that we have. And there will still be some ongoing reporting that will have to be done to the commission with some of the new legislation on tracking water resources. We've already filed the first one of those this year, but if we opt out of the IURC, the buck stops here, which it sort of does anyway for all you. You're the ones that have to pass the rate ordinance and face the local public, and then going through that process down in Indianapolis. Again, if this was a for-profit utility and people felt like they were really getting taken advantage of by the utility shareholders or management or whatever, there's a good function for that kind of regulation. But in our case, it's been sort of a impediment time-wise, cost-wise, and then lost opportunity cost-wise is really the biggest hurdle. And so I think that's kind of the issues that are out there. It's not that the commission is a bad thing. It's in our case, we've had several experiences where, you know, you end up getting dinged a little bit you don't feel too bad about that, but when you look at how much it cost and how long it took, is that really worth that extra oversight? And we're still going to have EPA, IDEM, State Board of Accounts, DLGF. I mean, you still have all those other regulatory bodies that are really scrutinizing, you know, especially the State Board of Accounts. That's the group that would really, you know, if the utilities were mismanaging their funds, that's where that would show up. It wouldn't show up at a commission rate case. So for those reasons, I think the mayor would like to at least put this forward one more time. If it passes at the council level, there'll be a written notice sent to each ratepayer and notifying them. We'll have a public hearing here and sort of explain the same type of thing. We may put these slides up on a overhead if we get a big turnout, but you know, I think, you know, we haven't been asking for that much more than what they've been willing to give us, and I think we've got a pretty good stewardship here of the ratepayers' funds, and I guess at this point, does the council have questions about this issue?
This is more of a theoretical question. One of the things that came out of the water rate was that people would rather have seen a phased-in rate. So, yeah. For example, had we done a 2% or 3% every year for 10 years, would we had to gone through this process every year?
If you were under the commission.
Under the commission.
You would. If you were on your own, you could do. And that's really the deterrent to going to the commission is, if you're going to go down there, you don't want to just go for 2 or 3%. That barely recovers your cost of going through the process. But if you were self-regulated and did those kinds of things in-house, you could do smaller increments on a more frequent basis. And that, you're exactly right on. That is a lot easier pill to swallow. But when you're, you know, upside down and your operating fund and you've got projects that have to get built, and this is the water utility, it's not I think the other thing is, when you look at your rates relative to other costs, your water's cheap here. I mean, you look, everybody's got a bottle of water that you'd pay $1, $1.50 at the gas station for it. You're getting 5,000 gallons of water for $26. That's not a bad deal. But you're right. If you had that, and the electric's the same. Now that we don't need to go quite as frequently with the electric because you have the quarterly tracking factor that every time IMPA's rates change, there's a procedure where that is, you know, it's reviewed by the IURC, but we get those approved every 3 months. Those flow through rates for commodity that you buy from IMPA and resell to your customers, whatever that cost is, we benchmark that with what's in the base rates, and then that tracking factor, it keeps you whole there. So, and that's probably 70% of your cost of service on the electric rates. So it's just that 30%, that's the overhead part that needs to be addressed from time to time. But so it's less frequent there, but the water utility has really been kind of pinned down for a number of years financially, and the cost and aggravation of going through the process has been a deterrent to, you know, maybe do things on a more frequent basis where you could do more modest adjustments. And yeah, that's a terrific incentive to consider this opting out.
So really the only difference between where we are today under the IURC and where we are would be without it is the whole rate process.
Yeah, you'd
flexibility.
You'd save about 6 months. Your ability to react to economic conditions is greatly enhanced. You know, you're going from a 9 months. It's really about a year process when you start from square one to by the time you get the thing filed, and then you got another tack another 6 months onto that, and in this case 8 months. But
basically, the financial savings to the city is, you know, what I got here. Incredible amount of savings. I mean, when
The actual cost of the professional fees and so forth is probably 2 to 3 times in a regulated versus a deregulated environment. But the opportunity cost is 6 or 8 months. And that being able to react with the speed of business, somebody, I heard that buzzword once and I thought that was a good analogy. You know, business moves at a certain pace. When your hands are tied with 6 or 8 months of regulatory lag, it's hard to keep pace sometimes with where you need to be. So
I think the question the general public would have, I think, would be if we're out of this, I think it maybe scares them because it would be like, if we're out of this, then that means we can just do whatever we want. And maybe you could speak more to what the procedure would be if, because we will still have some regulation.
Yes.
But just not this like middleman type thing.
Yeah, you're still going to have the State Board of Accounts. They're going to audit you every year. And that is really the, you know, if there's anything going on that shouldn't be going on, they're the ones that find that, not the commission. And that happens every year, whether you're in or out. The only thing that we would be would not have to do would be to go to them for our rates and financing. And even if you could do a bond issue without a rate increase, right now you still have to go through the commission to get approval to do a financing. There are some fees that are paid there. They're nominal. I think 0.25% of the bond proceeds gets is one of the charges to the commission that has to be paid before you put your rate in place. But no, you're still going to have, I mean, you're going to have IDEM and EPA putting requirements on you that's going to demand that you invest capital to maintain compliance with their standards. And you don't have this issue with the wastewater utility. You've been doing that all along without any commission oversight, and that's sort of a quirk in the rules because the municipal sewage works falls under the public works statute, whereas the municipal utilities are under the utility statute. They're two different. The formulas are the same, but the procedure for public utilities, unless you take this action, requires that you go through that process. But like I say, over 400 municipal water utilities in Indiana, I would say that's probably 80% or better, have opted out already, and almost 90% or more than 90, 65 out of 72, I have to do that math in my head, it's close to 90% of the municipal electrics have already done this. So it's not a you're not going out on a limb in considering this by any means, and we think that the cost benefit is in your favor if you took this route.
Other questions for Buzz? You know, I know that just as a general comment, you know, I know that we all feel, ultimately we all feel like we never want to do rate increases. As much as we agonized the last session over the sewer rate stuff and knowing what federal mandates are coming down the pipe and knowing what that's going to end up costing our customers and trying to find ways to cut back on cost, we agonize over that. And so I guess I just want to make sure it's clear that, first of all, we don't have any intention in going after an electric or water rate increase in the near future. Okay, so that's first of all. Second of all, we really don't want to do rate increases. I mean, what would you not all say that that's about the least, you know, a thing that we want to do? Sometimes, like Ben's question led to, sometimes we'd rather phase it in, like we're looking at for sewer. We'd rather phase it in. Under IURC jurisdiction currently, really, it's not worth it, because by the time you have the legal fees, you know, Buzz addressed it. So I just want to make sure that it's understood that, that the whole purpose behind getting out of the IURC or opting out of the IURC is to control our costs, to allow flexibility for us to be able to phase rates in, and quite frankly, to put the local control back in power, I guess, if you will. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to this. In the last rate case, I think it was mentioned somewhere along the line that we had, I think, 8 or 9 comments, I think, that went to the IURC in our last water rate case. I think that was what came. Okay, so what the IURC is basically, and again, I'm trying not to be in a bashing mode here, but what the IURC is basing their counter rate, if you will, 75% or 75 cent difference here, was on 8 or 9 comments that they were getting. We hear the comments of hundreds of people. We represent 8,775 people in Columbia City. And I think I find it a little difficult, and I'll get off my soapbox in a second, but I find it a little difficult to have that control be based on 8 or 9 comments 2.5 hours away from here in Indianapolis, when we live by these ratepayers. We are these ratepayers. We're hearing from our citizens every day. I get multiple visits every day in my office, and so I think that's kind of the purpose, and this is why I think it's important. Not everyone's going to agree with me, but I do think that this is important. So, off my soapbox. Any other questions or comments of Buzz before I...
No, I think those were spot on.
I guess the main complaints or concerns I heard from 3 or 4 people last week, they were concerned about the oversight of the utility if it was removed, number one, and number two, what the complaints process was if they didn't feel like they got something resolved at the local level. I don't know if there is one or...
I can't think of a time where there's been an issue that where somebody complained to the commission. I guess that still could be.
And there's only 9 but in all of Whitley County.
Well, I think I don't know that they complained. They just sent comments in. Or what? Do you know what the nature of their?
I got that figure from Ben. Okay. Strangely, but I mean from if I think we got a print off of those, didn't we?
I think
of the comments that we got in the last water rate increase.
I believe we did.
Yeah.
So some people did send.
Yeah, but they were.
I mean, they're really, like I said, there was a handful of them. A lot of them talked about. Actually, I think a lot of them talked about it being phased in, if I remember those correctly.
That's what was discussed at the hearing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I think it was in the IURC's annual report. They had listed every county and the number of complaints per county, and that was there was 9 for the entire county. And that might have all been in South Whitley. I don't know, but it didn't say.
We like to think it was in South Whitley.
I mean, from my perspective, you guys run a really good show here and have for a long time. You've got great department heads running those departments. You got clerk treasurer treats a checkbook like it's her own, and you know, you've always had really good leadership, and that's a credit to the people that elect you all. You know, if that wasn't the case, then, you know, the commission would, that role would be much more important. But,
does that address your question, Ben, or?
I've seen
they do field hearings sometimes. Somebody will send a complaint and they'll schedule field hearing, and then they'll have judges and everybody, you know, coming up for these field hearings, and you know, maybe 5 or 6 people show up, and maybe one person will say something and it's usually, well, I don't want to pay more, and you know, nobody wants to pay more.
Certainly don't want to.
To have real substantive criticisms, you know, you just don't. I'm not seeing any of that here for sure. And
okay. Last question for Buzz.
Then, are assuming that this does move forward, have we set a date, a target date for the public hearing?
It'll be at the next council meeting.
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks from tonight?
That's correct.
Okay. We've got the notices already.
Yeah, and it went to all the...
Oh, it's already gone out.
Yeah, it's already gone out.
Well, you guys on it.
Yep.
I'll be here for that night, too, and okay. We can coordinate. If you get feedback in this interim period, you know, please let Ryan and Rosie know and filter that back to me, and we'll do our best to address any concerns that people do convey. But again, I think the commission serves a great purpose in an investor-owned environment, and it could be a great purpose if you didn't have good leadership and stewardship. In our case and past experiences here, you know, the cost benefit just seems a little questionable.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Appreciate it. Okay. Mr. Goodwin, would you like to say something? If you could just for the recorder state your name and address, that would be lovely.
Hey, my name is Dick Goodwin. I live at 1629 East Bear Road, which is outside of the city. I'm a member of the Whitley County Patriots, and frankly, I'm a citizen of Whitley County, and the citizens, we're totally fed up and scared to death from Washington, D.C. all the way down to our local. It just seems like we're getting ate alive. I've learned a lot about the IORC here tonight, and I would just... to stop the firestorm that may be coming your way as our representatives, be crystal clear with the public and let them know that you're not up here and we're down here, because it's very important that you really dissect what you're doing here, because there's so much mistrust going on out there amongst the general public. And this is a small community. You feel it. And you know what's going on. And there was one portion of your letter that you sent out, Mr. Mayor, where you said you spent $320,000.
Did I specifically say we spent $320,000?
Well, it said it cost the city over $320,000.
Right.
But there wasn't any dissecting of that $320,000. All people see is $320,000.
Okay.
You know, politicians historically are not trusted.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, in the way everything is being throughout the entire country,
mm-hmm.
we're being betrayed. And that is conveyed amongst people everywhere from everything that we're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court decisions we're finding, all the way down to our local level, you have to deal with the people here.
Yeah.
And you are our people. I was surprised how many of you I know, and I haven't been in Columbia City very long. But I've learned this community is my home now, and I plan on doing everything I can do to protect it. And one of the things that everybody's starting watchdog groups. I mean, your Patriot groups, your Tea Party groups, they've gotten started because people don't trust government anymore. It's frightening when you go out there and talk to other people. You as politicians, you sit up here and you talk to people. I get out amongst them where, because I'm not a threat, you are. And I hear a whole new ball game than what you're talking. So I'm just... please be very, very crystal clear with people. You're spending their money. You're talking about their lives. And it might be 20 cents and it doesn't sound like much, but you took on the job to represent us. And I'm just asking you to be very careful how you do it. Because if you don't, there's a war coming, and none of us want to see it. So I've learned a lot here tonight, and I appreciate it even being here. I wasn't going to say anything because you guys have answered pretty much everything that I was going to stand up here and say, but you are representatives, and you're doing a good job. But to the general public, you know, please be crystal clear with them. Make them understand why you're doing what you're doing, because the consensus is, as I've heard, is that you guys want to dump these groups that are protecting us because you want your way. That's what I'm hearing. And those are dangerous thoughts.
So there's a way to change that. That is obviously a misconception, because all of us are we're utility users as well, and I don't want to pay any more than I have to either, but we were also sworn in at the time of when we got elected to uphold the fact that you got clean water to drink, you can flush your toilet, you turn on electricity, and you got police and fire protection. We were sworn to make sure ensure that happens. And so when things come around, we have to, again, go dig in as hard as we can to figure out how, you know, to continue to make that happen for our citizens, because we are not any different than anybody else that's out there using the utilities. And I know for me personally, that's anytime there's a rate increase, I got a big adjustment to make in my the way I do my finances. So, you know, I just wish there was a way to make sure that people understand that we are no different than they are, and we're not out here by deregulating that, so to speak, is, you know, we're out to try to gouge anybody. I mean, it's just another way of saving, you know, our citizens, which we all are, some more money. You know, I mean,
a year ago when the rate increases were first talked about, the IORC or whatever they are, OUCC, they got involved. Yep. Fort Wayne changed. You guys changed. Everything happened. So everybody is saying, well, these people are protecting us. And that's the big thing. They say this is an outside group that's watching what you're doing. And they are making you stay in line for us. That's the feelings. That's how everybody feels.
Well, I think there's so many other agencies like the DLGF and the State Board of Accounts and those people that are already watching over us, because, I don't know, I've sat in on a couple explanations through the State Board of Accounts and how critical they are of how we spend our money. It's unbelievable. I've never had that experience until here just recently, in the last, well, since I've been elected as council president, to sit in and see how critical they are of how we spend our money. It's quite amazing. It's a real educational experience.
They spend 3 to 4 months here auditing us, every book that we have.
Well, I think that, you know, you really need to go out of your way to explain this to the general public of why, how, and when, and the reasoning behind it. Because even as much as last night I heard say, well, you know, the ones that are up there now are going to be gone in 10 years. What happens if we get somebody different, just goes in and does what he wants to do? I mean, we've got one of those now in Washington, D.C., is doing what he wants to do. And everybody is, I just say to the general public right now, and you should be too, just scared to death. We don't know what's going to happen.
I have a question. If you feel like that you are being mistreated, would you feel more comfortable going to Indianapolis and talking to them, or coming up here and talking to us?
I think the sense of security would be going to Indianapolis, but the reality is coming here.
Okay.
You're people here, you're the ones making the decision, but we feel as if that's our protectors there. Hmm. We're calling Indianapolis, and when you were, the number of petitions that you were talking about that went down to Indianapolis to the boards last year, you keep saying 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. I counted several hundred myself.
From Whitley County?
In Whitley County.
Really? Where was that at? I'm sorry.
Well, the Whitley County Patriots were putting them on all over the place, and I seen four or five sheets this high with names on
down
them.
Down to the IURC?
It went to Indianapolis. I don't know where they went at that time.
Oh, okay.
I haven't followed this group.
Yeah.
We've got another girl, Susan Davison, who's been following you guys, been watching you. And she couldn't make it tonight. She asked me to come up here. And, you know, frankly, I'm not educated on this enough to get up here on a soapbox, but I learned pretty quick tonight. And I do appreciate what you guys are doing. And I think you are working in the best interest of everybody concerned. And I, you know, I talked to Dan before the thing, and I'm convinced that you're making the right move. But I'm one.
I 100%.
I really don't want to see this room filled up with a bunch of people who don't understand, that are yelling and screaming at you, because they're out there.
Mm-hmm. But see, I would have liked to see in this room filled with a bunch of people so they could stand up like you and say, now we know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but if they're out there yelling and screaming at you, you're not going to get anything done.
Right.
Well, I appreciate that we don't want them to yell and scream, but since this has come up, there is no one that's approached me on this issue. And not just this issue, but many issues that we deal with over the course of the year, it would be better to have public opinion on these things as opposed to, you know, empty chairs. You know, it's always best for the public to be represented with their opinion.
I understand, but right now the water and sewer, they're a hotbed.
I know, mm-hmm. I know.
And with the way, like I said, normally the common citizen doesn't worry too much about it, but we're getting butchered, and so are you. I mean, we all are.
Mm-hmm.
The fortunate part is you're here at home, so we can talk to you.
Very good.
So I appreciate you allowing me to talk tonight, and I just hope that you, before you do this, you go way out of your way to try to inform as many people as you can the detailed reasoning why you're doing this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And it's the future we're worried about, too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
To clarify the 8 or 9 complaints, the IURC does an annual report, and in that they list all the counties and the number of complaints they got from it. So the complaints, the petitions you've sent down there, I don't know where they're going. That was off the IURC's report from 2010-2011.
Well, I know that they had them over at a meeting that we have. Our steering meeting meets every Monday night, and we have since the elections. And you've been to a few of our meetings. So the ones that I seen, there was 3 or 4 pages that had names listed all the way up and down.
So they may list each petition as one complaint.
I don't know how they figured. I just signed it and give it back to her. So.
Okay.
But I know there was a lot more names on it than 8 or 9. So there is concern.
And again, this issue is going to be at our next meeting. And so, you know, I would encourage as many people as can be to be here for the hearing and to give input, and that's what it's for.
Yep. And we'll continue to try to do as much outreach as we can. You know, I first introduced this idea at my State of the City address that was covered. Now, granted, obviously not everyone subscribes to the Post and Mail. Not everyone looks at Talk of the Town. So, I mean, it kind of goes back to our original issue of never know how to get the information out more than where we're at. But I think, you know, there's other things that we can do, and I appreciate you bringing that to light.
And we did bring and send out mailings.
Yep.
I know I've been contacted by a few people, so I've been contacted by after the mailings went out. So it's, I don't know if they're afraid to talk to us. I mean, my phone is always open.
But we obviously need to do a little bit more outreach between now and the next meeting then. So.
Well, like I said, the mistrust out there of the governmental structure right now is extremely high.
And we had a parking committee meeting this morning, and I don't know, Bill, if you were involved, but at least Dan and I were talking about how, unfortunately, the feds get and the state, I mean, more the feds than anybody else, but get the state and the locals in trouble because they bundle us into one group. Not to say that there aren't some local governments that should be distrusted, because I'm sure they're out there. But, you know, unfortunately, we get lumped in together with the federal government and some of the crazy things that they do, but that's an obstacle we have to overcome. So, thank you again for being here, sir.
Thank you.
Very much so. Okay. So, in front of you is Ordinance 2013-13. It is the removal of water jurisdiction from the IURC. We have, as a reminder, we will have two readings on this. Tonight will be the first reading. If it passes tonight, it will go to a second reading. We do have a scheduled public hearing at the next meeting. That will be held prior to the second reading of both the water and the electric. So, with that being said, do I have a motion to read Ordinance 2013-13 by title only?
So moved.
Motion by Nicole.
Second.
Seconded by Dan. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read 2013-13 by title only.
Ordinance 2013-13, an ordinance amending Chapter 52, Water Service of Title 5 of the Code of Ordinances for the City of Columbia City, Indiana, relating to the removal of the city's water utility from the jurisdiction of the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission.
Okay. Obviously, I don't think I need to discuss this anymore. We've talked about it a lot. I like to hash that stuff out prior to us getting to the ordinance itself. The ordinance, as stated in the title, will opt us out of the for the water utility. We'll opt the water utility out of the IURC. So, questions, comments? Obviously, we have another reading coming up, but questions, comments, concerns? Hearing none, can I have a motion?
I do have one comment.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Ben.
And I think, to his point, we mm-hmm. need to do everything we can, whether it's to get an article in the press explaining some of what Buzz discussed mm-hmm. today, giving that, you know, that it gives us the ability to phase in rates rather than have large increases, mm-hmm. that the oversight is still there. Because
mm-hmm.
that's the biggest concern I've heard, is that there is no oversight if we're out of the IURC, which is not the case, mm-hmm. but that's the
consensus
yep. of what people are thinking is out there.
And I very much appreciate that, and I agree. We should do everything we can. One of the things that I will probably be doing is on my WJHS is hosting my radio hour-long program. Mm-hmm. Probably has two tuner inners, but anyways, my mom and somebody else, I'm sure. But in any case, I will be discussing the IURC opt-out a little bit on that program. But, I mean, to the best of my ability, when you get out to talk to groups of people, I would just suggest really getting out there and talking to people when you have that opportunity. Someone brings up anything like that, discuss it in full. And if you have questions, if there are questions, please let me or Rosie know. If there are questions you guys can't answer, let us know. If it's questions we can't answer, we'll get the expert who's worked on multiple, you know, opt-outs. But we'll get answers for our citizens when they need it, for sure.
So is there a form of media that your group follows?
It's word of mouth, you know. Mm-hmm. We're very diverse. We're around, at our monthly meetings, we'll have 100 people there, 100 times 10, times 20, times 30.
Yep.
I mean, it spiderwebs pretty fast.
Well, we did an experiment this last weekend with my softball team, and we started we placed a sentence at one end, and by the time it got to the other end, it was completely different.
So
we need to make sure when we're doing that the same sentence gets said mm-hmm. all the way through.
We've got a webmaster, and he sends emails, what he calls a blast,
mm-hmm.
and it goes out to literally hundreds of people, and nothing changes. It's all the same message. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So when is your?
I know that happens. Mm-hmm.
So when is your next meeting between now and 2 weeks?
First Tuesday next month.
Which would be the second?
That would be the second.
It might not even hurt to have a representative there to talk about, because it's an educational night. We're talking about the Second Amendment, Common Core.
Oh, yeah.
And we're dissecting all these things. Mm-hmm. These groups are, and just for your information, here are the Northeastern Indiana Coalition of Patriot Tea Party groups are all getting together. We're talking thousands.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing is growing in leaps and bounds. It's just, mm-hmm. it's kind of frightening how fast it's going.
They're getting together to kind of bond together.
To become one voice.
Okay, okay. On national, local, state
national,
issues.
Local, the things that we can get involved in.
Yeah, I understand. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions, comments, concerns? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve?
I move that we approve Ordinance 2013-13.
Second.
Motion by Bill, seconded by Jackie. Further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Okay, let's go. Could I have a motion to read 2013-14 by title only?
So moved.
Motion by Ben.
Second.
Seconded by Jackie. All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Please read 2013-14 by title only.
Ordinance 2013-14, an ordinance amending Chapter 50, Electric Service of Title 5 of the Code of Ordinances for the City of Columbia City, Indiana, relating to the removal of the city's electric utility from the jurisdiction of the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission.
Okay. Thank you. So this is the electric version of what we just passed for water. I'm going to assume there's not any questions or comments, but I'll throw it back out. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Motioned by Jackie, seconded by Dan. Further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. We'll move both of those to second reading. Okay, next up in the hit parade are the public hearings for the reestablishment of the Cume Park and Recreation Fund. Do we need to hold these? We can't hold these concurrently, right? We need to hold these separately?
I don't know why you couldn't
do them concurrently. Okay. Marcia, is that okay?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. If not, then we'll do something else later, I guess. Okay, so I'm going to... for some reason, I'm drawing a blank. Pause the meeting. That's another word. Suspend. Thank you. I'm going to suspend the meeting and open up the public hearing. As you all know, we are attempting to reestablish the Cumulative Park and Recreation Fund, the Cumulative Fire Fund, and the Cumulative Street Fund. Rosie, I know you've done a lot of work on this and what the difference has been from the state, how they've knocked us down. Aaron, thanks for being a trooper, by the way. you got the luck of the draw on this one from the Youth Council. So in this public hearing, you have the differences that have taken place over the years. And what can you kind of explain the process and where we've been, where we're going?
Yeah, I'm just going to go back a few years mm-hmm. here, but the state when your assessed valuation goes up, mm-hmm. that means you're going to get more revenue, and so the state doesn't want you to get in a windfall of taxes. So what they do is they go in and cut these rates so that you can't get that windfall. And I'm just going to have the fire ones first here. It's down about $72,000 from 2 years ago, a year, of what we were getting. And the street is down about $102,000. And the park is down about $35,000. Now, the park can't get as much as the street. The street has a higher rate, but... and so the only way you can start getting that money back is if you reestablish those rates.
Back to when they were originally established, back to that
right.
rate.
And even then, that you'll not end up getting it
yeah.
because as soon as your assessed value
yeah.
goes up, which, as I told you last council,
it
went
is.
Up, and
yeah.
our tax rates went down, so we just lost more money.
Yeah. So it's almost like the state, if I'm remembering correctly or hearing you correctly, it's almost like the state says, well, your community has grown and your assessed value has grown, so we need to knock down your taxes.
Yeah, because they don't want you to get in a windfall tax.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily like the word windfall, but basically
that's
it's...
That's what they call.
Yeah, that's what they call. And I know, and that's why I appreciate you using that, but basically what that means is that you're not able to capture that additional tax dollars to put toward our streets and our roads, to put toward our parks programs, to put toward our, you know, our fire station or our fire trucks, which is what will be used with the fire, the CUME fire fund. So,
And if I understood you correctly, whatever we have in our general budget, it either has to go in the rainy day fund or it has to be spent, correct? Or you lower the rate. So you couldn't set that aside. You couldn't put that back in the CUME cap fund.
No. What's ever in our CUME funds or general fund?
I'm saying if the assessed value goes up, so they lower our CUME cap rate.
Okay.
So in theory, we should be having more general dollars come in.
And they take that away.
And they take that away. The CUME cap funds are set up to set aside money over time to pay for large capital expenditures.
Correct.
So they're basically taking away the general fund, which you can't use for that.
Right.
And lowering the rate
of
the CUME cap that you're saving.
You got it.
It's well said. I could not have said it better than you just said it, Ben. And I'm dead serious about that.
I was just making sure that we weren't getting that money through the general fund.
No.
No.
We're just not getting it, period.
If we do reestablish these CUME funds, and let's just say the street funds, and we are allowed to get our $100,000+ more that they took away from us, we can cut out some of the operating expenses of the street fund and move it to this.
Okay.
So it eliminates that money to be used other places.
So it's a specialized use of those dollars.
Yeah.
So you know, by reestablishing the street fund, those dollars will go toward street improvements. I mean, it's very specified, whereas in the general tax dollars, you know, as those CUME rates go down, that shifts more of the burden of taking care of, and again, I'm picking on Kelly, but that takes the burden of taking care of our streets and roads and shifts it from those CUME funds back into our general fund. And of course, our general fund is a pie, and it's only so, you know, so as we take a bigger chunk for street, that means typically police and fire and dispatch and, you know, the other general fund departments, their pie amount goes down. So it becomes a who gets the piece of the pie. Because the state doesn't want us to have those additional revenues as our community grows, unfortunately.
Plus, with the CUME cap funds, it prevents us from having to borrow money
when those
expenditures come
up.
And like the park CUME fund, you know, I'm sure we've got to start saving for this pool or whatever we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of the major repairs, if there's any, that comes out of there. So, you know, it's just...
Yeah, I know Mark's not here tonight. He apologizes. He's on his way. I think he's going on vacation. I'm not sure. But anyways, I don't remember. It's not that I'm not sure. I just don't remember. But he kind of gave me a breakdown of some of the things that he used from the CUME fund. The DeVol Field renovation, purchase of the new playground equipment, renovation of the pavilion that's taking place right now, the trail expansion as a kind of a match component to that, and the new bridge project. They pay for mowers and trucks for that, more mowers than trucks, I would say, but the tennis court repairs down at DeVol, the engineering investigation for Burnworth Pool came from the CUME fund, and then, of course, all kind of other major repairs come from that. So this is, I just want to make sure it's clear that this is not money going towards staffing. It is going toward repairs, capital equipment, capital expenditures. That's what these dollars are going toward.
And that's all it can be used for. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to remember the exact specifications, but I know it can't be used for salaries. I know it can't be used for benefits. It can't be used for those kind of things. It's for capital improvements or repairs.
Yeah, and it's actually, I think, pretty much in our ordinance, original ordinance, what it's allowed to be used for.
Yeah. So, we'll open up the public hearing if anybody would like to make any comments. Okay. Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing, and we will move on, and I will reassemble the reassemble the city council meeting, and if we can go to resolution 2013 2-7. If I could, well, I guess it's a, if I could read resolution, if I could have a motion to read resolution 2013-7 by title only.
So moved.
Second.
Motioned by, I think it was Ben. Okay, seconded by Dan. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Okay. Please read 2013-7 by title only.
Resolution 2013-7, reestablishment of the accumulated fire fund under section IC-36-8-14.
Okay. Any questions, comments, concerns about this? Again, we try to get the stuff taken care of before we read it, but...
And since this is a resolution, it'll be passed.
There's not two readings on this. Okay. Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve?
Make a motion we approve resolution 2013-7.
Second.
Motioned by Ben, seconded by Nicole. All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Okay. Could I have a motion to read 2013-8 by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motioned by Jackie, seconded by Dan. All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read 2013-8 by title only.
Resolution 2013-8, reestablishing of the accumulated park and recreation under IC-36-10-3-21.
Okay. Any questions, comments, concerns on this? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Motioned by Bill, seconded by Dan. All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Okay. And could I have a motion to read 2013-9 by title only?
So moved.
Motioned by Dan.
Second.
Seconded by Jackie. All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read 2013-9 by title only.
Resolution 2013-9, reestablishing the cumulative bridge and street fund under IC-36-9-16.5.
Okay. Any questions, comments, concerns on this? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Motioned by Jackie, seconded by Bill. All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Thank you very much. Okay. Next up in the hit parade is the rezone of Wayne Waste. This is our second reading. Can I have a motion to read 2013-10 by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motioned by Ben, seconded by Nicole. All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read Ordinance 2013-10 by title only. Sorry.
Ordinance 2013-10, an ordinance amending the zoning classification of certain property from the A1 Agricultural District to the I1 Light Industrial District.
You'll remember at the last council meeting, this was passed. This is basically changing the Wayne Waste, Wayne Reclamation and Recycling site, Wayne Waste site, if you will, from agricultural to light industrial. Really doesn't change anything, but that was a request, if I remember. It came from, did it come from EPA or came from, who did it come from? Do you remember?
Basically. Jeff, I'm trying to remember. Was it EPA that actually wanted the change?
Or yeah, it was.
It's this group that I.
They threw the
PRP.
Non-city settlers.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think it is.
Through IEM.
So basically, it's just changing the classification of that property. As we all know, that property is really not usable, and won't be usable for quite some time. Was that a question I saw,
yes.
Bill? Okay. Yes, Bill.
There are survey flags on the property. Was that just part of that normal process, or?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Yeah, there was. They had to come up with surveys and legal descriptions to get recorded at the county. So yeah, that was done by the non-city settlers group.
Okay, so it's not that they're planning on using it for anything different. Just that. Okay.
It just had to clearly delineate everything.
Yeah, the legal descriptions for that area is quite a mess. Quite honestly, or I don't know whoever wrote them up before, but I know I was trying to read them and try to determine where the property lines were. And thank goodness they did go ahead with the survey, which better depicts that. So
that was actually done by a local firm, former county engineer, so it was done correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Other questions or comments or concerns? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve?
Second.
Okay. Motioned by Dan, seconded by Ben. All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. We have passed 2013-10 on second reading. Okay. Next up is ordinance 2013-11. Now, I'm going to turn this over to Marcia because she found some potential issues that I guess I'll just let you address, Marcia. I mean, I don't remember all of them.
I just wanted to be able to be in on the discussion.
Because you didn't get to last time.
I wasn't here last time. I wanted to make sure I didn't miss out on all the fun.
And just to be clear, this is the ordinance prohibiting nude and semi-nude acts in commercial establishments.
What I considered in discussing with Greg as well, who was here at the last meeting, if you recall, was just some thoughts on the broadness of the document, because it doesn't have definition of the term act, and it doesn't have definition of the term commercial establishments. And what I don't want to do, of course, is to have, you know, just your basic stuff at the YMCA, you know, changing a baby or something like this, creating problems with this document. And this came to me with the situation in New York with the quick rush on the gun law, and of course I think that the police department got caught up in that. Is that right, Bill? And isn't that the problem that the police department ended up coming under the new New York gun laws and couldn't carry their guns and everything else or whatever the situation was? So my concern is I don't want this one to be so broad that we fail to meet the purpose of the ordinance. So my request is, if I could please go back and I guess table this for tonight and create some definitions for those two terms of art, and so change the ordinance just with those two things. If that's okay with everyone.
Mm-hmm. I would say that's a good idea with what's going on in Angola. The clearer it is, the better.
Yeah.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And then Rosie can read it in its entirety.
Okay. So, sounds like we're in consensus that we're going to allow our city attorney to take it back, do some defining of some of the different terms to make sure that we're acting responsibly with this ordinance. Mm-hmm. Okay? Very good. Okay, then we will pass that and go next to the statement of benefits, compliance with statement of benefits for Peak Performance Properties. Rosie?
Yes, everybody should have a copy of their compliance with statement of benefits. And if you look at what they estimated on their SB1 compared to their actual, they are way above it. Mm-hmm. And so they are in compliance. And I recommend that you approve it for another year.
And this was done in 2010. Was it a 10-year abatement?
It was, yes, a 10-year.
Okay. So in 2020, this will expire. Okay. Year three.
Make a motion we renew the abatement for Peak Performance Properties, LLC, for another year.
Second.
Motioned by Ben, seconded by Nicole. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Thank you. Okay. What a long road we traveled to get to department head reports. We will start with Jeff and work our way around the room.
Thank you.
Jeff.
Good evening. A lot of my time this last week has been devoted to economic and community development, which is a good thing. I first met with developers for three different residential subdivisions, all considering expansions of their existing housing stock. So that's looking real promising. Obviously, it benefits our utilities and we get additional users as well. On top of that, the mayor and I have met with no less than four, and I think five developments of
potential developments in the last couple of weeks period. So I've been working at providing a lot of information to respond to their needs and inquiries. And obviously it's nothing that we can share at this point because it's just inquiries. But I think it's really neat, and it says a lot about Columbia City, the amount of interest we have going on right now. So I don't remember a time that's had this amount of activity. So it's a little refreshing, and I don't mind that amount of work devoted to that part of my job responsibility. Last week also, we had the GAI to go over the draft design for the Southwest Storm Sewer Project. And I want to give a shout out to Kelly Searball and his guys. They've done a really diligent job of getting as much information about where our infrastructure is at currently to make these designs the best that can be for contractors to bid on. The Board of Works earlier this evening voted on GIS software and hardware to equip all of our departments to go out in the field and be able to identify and mark up and inspect our infrastructure. I see eventually that where that'll be will be complete enough that, you know, like right now, probably is having to expend a considerable amount of resources to gather this information. Eventually we'll have it already down in GIS form on our computer. So I think that it's going to create a lot of productivity improvements as we get into it. When I was talking to Brad Smith, I jokingly said we'll have to get a purchase order and get it in here tomorrow. This company is so busy providing these services that as it stands right now, he said it'll probably be June 1st. So they are busy as well. But I think that the board took a real good step, and I appreciate their support on it. That's all I've got to say.
Questions of Jeff?
Is that something that works with what Dan does, or is that a whole different? So it'll overlay?
We'll be able to swap information a lot easier.
It helps bridge between the county and the city with how we work.
Okay.
I think one of the best, you know, parts to come out of our discussion had to do with, you know, if a transformer or a pole or something goes down out the lakes or something, maybe we're Dick that basically with the software we can pinpoint exactly where it's at and know exactly what's on that pole. So we know what parts to take out. We know what the situation generally is. We know what it's going to take to get it taken care of, so we don't have to go back and forth from Bear Road back to Columbia City and so on and so forth. So
it virtually works with every department.
Mm-hmm.
Great institution.
Yep. Very good. Other questions of Jeff? Thank you, Jeff. Tom?
Other than the monthly report that came out, which you should be getting another one here in the next week, we've had four of our volunteers completed Firefighter 1-2, which is a huge six-month undertaking. I'm very proud of them for getting that. I had five guys complete vehicle machinery rescue tech certifications. I had one firefighter passed, one firefighter passed as instructor 2-3, which allows him to teach advanced firefighting classes. The Chiefs Association just received a large grant, communications grant, which I will tie up all of our repeaters on our fire red dispatching system so that they work cooperatively together, which is a big project that we got from FEMA, and I'm really glad to receive that.
Hey Tom, can you give a example of what that means? Because until you explained it to me, I didn't understand what that means.
What that would allow is if a firefighter is standing on a courthouse square and says, I've got a gentleman on the courthouse square that needs CPR, everybody in the county will hear it over that radio frequency in the county. It hits every repeater, and every firefighter in the county will hear that transmission. Or if one person gets on there and says, I have a firefighter trapped in a building, or a person in a fire building, everybody in the county hears it at the same time. As of right now, it's only by line of sight, maybe a half mile distance we have. because we just do not have that repeater system in our county, and it is truly a safety issue. So,
thanks, sir.
Yep. It was a big thing. I spoke that I had five guys go through vehicle machinery rescue tech certifications. In going through that class, we discovered that rescue airbags have a 10-year lifespan. We did not know that. There's a lot of departments in our community that probably do not know that. There was a lot, even Fort Wayne just found out a couple years ago. And they're the ones that told us about it, and we started researching and found it to be true. The problem is our rescue airbags are 15 years old. We do not have it in our budget to replace those rescue airbags, so I'm asking for additional appropriations to order new rescue airbags. They're high-pressure airbags used for lifting, say a semi would fall over onto a car. That's how we lift that semi off of the car to get the people out. We really need to get new rescue airbags. And we didn't budget for it because we didn't know that was the case.
How much are they?
$7,500.
For all of them?
For the whole set.
Yeah. Yeah. So is that something that you're, Tom, I know we've talked about this, and I apologize, I'm not remembering. Is that something that you're asking for out of the general fund, or is that something you're asking for out of your CUME funds?
We can take it out of the CUME funds. Just keep in mind, in doing so, if we purchase a truck in 2014, it may even create a little bit more of a shortfall on those CUME funds because of the problem that we've had with the declining amount going into the CUME funds. So we'll have to offset that next year when we look at the budgeting of the fire truck. So I'm asking for it out of the CUME funds this year.
Okay. So is that something you'd like a vote from us tonight on? Or from them?
I think Rosie would need that to get it going, would not?
Yeah, I need to schedule a public hearing and send it to the state for their approval. So
you just want a consensus from the council that that's okay to move forward on that process?
I didn't want to start the expense of the process without consensus that.
Does that need to be a motion or just?
Is that something that?
No, you don't need to. Just say.
I think it's just the general consensus. If you're okay with moving forward with doing the process of getting the additional appropriations, then I see mostly yes.
Okay.
Bill, how are you doing down there?
Oh, I guess.
Okay, so yes.
I just didn't want him to present that at a public hearing and you not know anything about it.
Yeah.
Not really want us to pursue it.
So does it have to go through state approval? If it's coming out of the CUME funds, or if we use regular funds?
If we use CUME funds, because we don't have a budget, we got to go back to them and get additional appropriation from the state.
I'm saying if we used other funds locally.
Yeah, if we had some money that we could use.
If we use general funds, then would we still have to go through the same process, I think is what Ben's
asking.
Not if you can find the money in the budget, somebody's budget.
Why are you looking at me?
How's the electric
department
doing?
No, Kelly wanted to give him the money or.
I'm just asking.
Well, to be fair, there are dollars in your guys' professional business account, if you will, that could be used for that. If you would prefer to split that with my professional business account, that's perfectly fine if that's what you'd like to do. But basically what you're saying is if you want to take it out of the general fund, you can do that tonight, right?
Yeah.
And if you wanted to do that out of the CUME fund, we'd need to go through the process.
Yeah, you just
which
have
is okay
to know in the general fund where you want to take it. And I'm sorry I don't have my printout with me, but
well, taking it out of the CUME fund, that leaves us a shortfall. So if we take
for
it
the
out
truck,
of,
yeah.
If we take it out of another the general, then we don't have a shortfall is the future for the truck if we have it available.
Plus we're not spending the cost to
go through the public
process,
hearing course.
Yeah.
Going through the state. Why don't you, if you want, maybe the mayor and I can sit down and look through the funds and see if we can come up with it somehow.
Yeah. But you want to, maybe at the next meeting we can present a, we'll say a funding package, but $7,500, but, where those dollars could come from.
Yeah.
We can do that.
We're all right with that, so we're going to show all that.
Yeah, and I agree. I do agree. I think if we can find it in the general fund, that would be more helpful than taking it out of the CUME fund where we know the truck is going to have to come out of next year?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I that's okay. Then we'll get together a list and we'll go forward with that. Okay? Anything else? Okay.
Is this a emergency thing that you need to get this ordered? Or
as of right now, we still have them in service because having something is better than nothing. We have the newest set that I know in our area. These things can catastrophically fail. After 10 years, we did not know this again, but Fort Wayne had a set catastrophically fail, and that's how we found out about the 10-year lifespan. You do crib up as you raise something that you're lifting. You do crib up as you're doing it with pieces of wood, and so it can only come down so far. I just don't ever want to be around them when they fail, and nor do I want somebody to have to wait while we get another set of them there because ours is no longer in service. So I guess to make a long story short, I would like to get these on order as soon as possible.
I guess the only reason I'm asking that is if you're committed to doing it and finding the money, he could still, because I don't know what the time frame is to get it. Is it months?
It should not be months. It should be a matter of a couple week or so.
Oh, that's all. Okay. I thought maybe it was something you had to order and it's going to take, you know, take a month or two.
Depending, they don't put us on back order. Or
no. Okay.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Tom. Mike Deere.
We fixed a 4-inch main break in the 400 block of West Ellsworth Street. I need to thank Kelly for telling us it was there. It wasn't coming to the surface. It was stuck. It was in a tile that he was cleaning and couldn't get his camera into it because the amount of water coming through it and everything. So we took care of that this week. And then we unloaded a couple of truckloads of pipe up on Frontage Road. As soon as the weather breaks a little bit, we're going to start on some of that. We're having a little bit of trouble right down at the 109 and Frontage Road intersection with the state highway and getting permit. They can't tell me where the right-of-way is. And none of the plans we have show the difference from city to state right-of-way. So we're going to start in on what we can, and hopefully they'll just let us do what we want to do and go on off the other markers that can be found. But they have no way of determining where their right-of-way is at. We put a new meter setting in Chesapeake Landing and turned on a new service out in Eagle Glen. And then we've still been putting meter information into the computer. We should finish that up next week. And basically that's now we've done some maintenance on most of our solenoid valves and our clay valves. Just kind of doing a cleanup of all those to get all the material that's caught in them out there and everything so they'll work right. And that leak, it looked like we were losing about 100,000 gallons a day when that leak was taking place. And it probably went on for 7 to 10 days by looking at pumpage records, but yeah. So that's about it.
Questions of Mike? Thank you, Mike. Larry?
Yes, Mayor.
Yes.
Can I ask something about the sump pump ordinance that I've been hearing about?
That's not mine. That's
stormwater over here. Actually, the sump pump, we've actually tabled that. We're rewriting that whole thing based on some additional guidance from IDEM. So we haven't, actually it died on second reading. So there'll be a new one that will come up that will be basically from this point forward rather than retroactive.
So it's going to be
Yes, yeah, it'll be represented and they'll have to have two readings and that kind of stuff. Yep, thanks. Okay, Larry.
We continue to trim our lines. We started today on a project on the Bear Road. We got it about half done, so we should finish that up tomorrow, thankfully.
Thank you, Larry.
We hauled the dirt out for at the location for our new sign so we could get it settled and things and ready for the sign to come. Checked our capacitors. We went down to CNR and got our meter finally programmed for their program that they're going to be running through that to keep better track of their demands. We went to the park, set one of their new scoreboards. Had our usual monolocate disconnect reads and reconnects as usual. Made a trip down to South Woodland, one of our monthly trips to fulfill our agreement with them, and
checked subs, and the reason we do this is like the one we checked this time, we had one of the heaters out, and when you switches in that subs gets cold, then you have problems. So it paid off this.
Great.
And basically, that's it.
How is that agreement going with South Whitley?
Well, pretty good. We got called down there the other afternoon two different times on a couple of different problems they had, and otherwise our trips down there during the month have been going good because they've been saving up odds and ends and have been keeping us busy. And I haven't heard any bad things from them as far as not being happy with what we've been providing. So
okay,
I
great.
Think we're doing very well.
Excellent. Questions of Larry? Thank you, Larry. Tim?
We are pleased to have our new officer, John Stoffel, with us. John graduated the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy on Friday, and his first official day was yesterday. So after a couple days in the office, just going through some paperwork and some HR, things like that, John will begin tomorrow on second shift with his field training. And that may be 6 weeks or so. We'll kind of see how that goes. But once the field training officers are comfortable and we're comfortable, then he will be on his own and put the rotation on second shift. So we're back to full staff. It's going to be nice to have him with us. The three new reserves are going through their 40-hour pre-basic training. And then they will also go through the field training program and once they're done with that 40-hour pre-basic. And I plan to have the three new reserves sworn in at the next meeting in 2 weeks. Our new laptops are in. I want to thank Terry. He's been working hard on getting all the software put on those laptops. And Gina is now working on putting e-ticket and Aries on those laptop computers. We will have training for the officers on all those operating systems soon, and then they will be put in the squad cars. Now, along with that, we are working on a new policy to address the laptop's use and our cell phone use as well. The captain continues to work on vehicle and equipment inventories. Every year we're going to do inventories on everybody's equipment, their vehicles, and everything is there that should be there, and that the items are serviceable and in good condition. Next week I'm going to work with Gina a little bit on kind of updating our website. Gina's actually taken some college classes over the past few weeks for website design. So I will work with her a little bit, making some updates to our website. And yesterday afternoon we had a award ceremony up here in the council room, and we recognized six officers for commendable actions that they've done over the past year. That's it.
Very good. Questions of Tim? Thank you, Tim. Terry?
Well, as Tim mentioned, been working with Gina trying to get those eight laptops set up so the guys can start using them. I think we're about finished with that. And our new employee, Cassie's been doing really well, so we're really happy that that's going well for her and our department also. We were able to get our IDAX computer at our Dispatch 2 locations, new one installed. We had to have help from AT&T and IDAX and Preferred IT to get the software to work because there were some issues there. It took a couple days to get that back up, but we got that back up. We're about at the end of our rotating computers out for this year. Most of them have been completed and done now. It'll just be maintenance on some of the other ones that we have and maybe replacing them with some we can rebuild. And that's about all I have.
Questions of Terry? Thank you, Terry. Kelly?
Well, we're 7 days into spring, and Monday we still get 3 to 4 inches of snow, which stunk. But we came in early Monday morning, started opening up the roads, and I wanted to thank Mike Deere, Mike Cook. I called these guys about 4:30 or 4 and see if they could make it in by 5 to help us in the alleys. And they said, yep, no problem, we'll be in. So it's a huge help. We had all the alleys ran by 7 o'clock in the morning, so hopefully to help people, you know, be able to get to work. And Also, one of Mike's guys, Rick Crusher, came in and helped too, along with Randy Jordan. Got him out of the mechanic shop for a day, and he also helped in the cul-de-sacs. Also, Scott Buckles from the water department helped open up cul-de-sacs too. So just thank those guys for their help. It's huge to get all that done. Mm-hmm. And then we hauled all the piles away from uptown today, and met with the youth council last week, and took them for a tour through our facility out the MSF. Talked a little bit about some of our programs that we do with the street and the sewer department. And we ended up going out to Heritage Place for a demo with a jet machine and the televising equipment.
On a very cold morning.
I know Aaron was out there freezing, probably. But, and then as Jeff had mentioned, Corey and I and Jeff had met with GAI last week on a south side stormwater project, and GAI has a list of about 10 items that they want us to investigate for them, and which is going to involve the jet machine, televising equipment, and possibly a backhoe to dig up some utilities to verify some things that they need. So we'll probably be working on that the rest of this week and probably next week.
Kelly, I apologize to interrupt, but did we get the parking lot stuff taken care of yet, or was the weather just not there for us?
Post office?
Yeah.
Still waiting on the placards to be put down. I worked with or talked with Ellis Amber. You met with him up there, and they're waiting until I think he's hopefully this week he might be able to get on that.
Okay.
And then we have some signs that we're waiting to that we ordered to come in to okay. finish that up.
Thanks. Sorry about that.
Spent a couple days on the cemetery, the annual cleanup. We worked on that, and that's something we do every year, go around and clean up the cemetery, get it ready for the mowing crew to come in. And I talked with our contractor that grinds our leaves. I thought that was going to be here the end of March, or the beginning of March, end of February, and they had some problems with their grinder, so they're working on welding some tips on that and getting it ready, and hopefully it'll be here by the first of next week. So that's all I have at this time.
Questions of Kelly? Hopeful that was the last snowfall.
Yeah.
Last sticking snowfall. Mike?
As I said in the past, the bridge crane was having issues. They've come back in, they put four brand new motors on their bridge crane now. Should work fine. They have heaters in them that if it's below 45 degrees, the heaters will automatically kick on, heat up, burn off any moisture that's in there. They have weep holes in them, so any of that collects will drain out. I did get a phone call from them the other day. I returned it today, but I didn't have a chance to play a little bit of phone tag. To come back in probably and look at the crane itself. The bridge is taken care of. I want to double check to make sure the crane itself does indeed have outboard motors too. If not, then they will need to change those out. And then I'm also requesting the informational sheets for the new motor to be sent to us for our files. UV bulbs have been installed. Everything has been cleaned. The bulbs are installed. Then they were turned on Monday morning. Got our first test results back this morning that was ran in our lab, and they're running perfect. So I was pleased with that. No glitches or anything on startup. Everything there was good. I'm getting a quote for pump number 3 on the influent from the loop wearing, the rotating process of changing those out. Those will be the last one. And then the next thing will come up in the next year and a half will be a overall inspection on all three pumps again, which we do every 3 years to just ensure that we maintain good quality there. Because if we lose those, we're in trouble. So they have to be in top running order all the time. J&K was in Monday, done our yearly PM on our trucks and our handhelds to ensure that they are up and operating the way they should be. And I'm waiting on information back from the high school and contact with him. I got with Tim and he gave me the lady's name for the internship. Program. I want to gather some information on that. So I'm waiting on the call. And just been working on regular equipment inspections and maintenance.
That's it. Questions of Mike? Thank you, Mike. I want to introduce Erin Schinbeckler. She is one of our youth council members. She drew the short straw in coming to this meeting. So, Erin, would you please introduce yourself, grade, school, and then what we did at the last meeting?
Okay. I'm Erin Schinbeckler. I'm a junior at the high school here in Columbia City, and I'm part of the Mayor's Youth Council. And this month we met and we took a tour of Kelly Stead. We went and visited him and the stream water department and saw one of the pumps being flush and just things along that sort. And then we came back here and we met with, is it the refreshment?
Oh, you mean when we had our roundtable here? We met with the Economic Development and Chamber of Commerce.
And just kind of talked about, they wanted our input on maybe what kind of businesses they could get to come here to maybe bring youth back to Columbia City, or that would be appealing to us younger generation to just keep us, to if we go away to college, to bring our, come back here and bring our family or whatever back here to Columbia City and just keep us around. So it was a good
community. So. And I don't want Larry to get jealous. You also visited Larry and Jeff too at the MSF. So yeah, I think you got to go into the South Substation, right, and take a look at that, which is near our wastewater plant and things like that. So. Questions of Erin. Thank you for being here, Erin. You can tell other youth council members of how you win the award for longevity. Marsha?
Nothing.
Rosie?
Nothing.
Jackie?
Nothing.
Only thing I have is just to let you know for the next day and a half, I'm going to be down at Mayor's Institute down in Indianapolis learning more about ways to be a better mayor. So I'll be doing that, but I'll be available by cell phone, email, like usual. So. Dan.
I know the parking committee met this morning.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Addressed a number of issues on the south side of town and try to resolve some of those as best we can. You know, still listening to downtown parking issues that will never end, I don't believe. But I think, you know, we're giving this a shot with the opening up the parking lot to the south of the post office. We're going to see how that works out for everybody. I think it's going to be a good thing. So.
Speaking of that, Tim, when you went by this morning, how many spots did you say were available?
23 out of 30.
I was going to say, I drove by too, and it was quite open unless they haven't figured that out yet.
I checked it at about 8:30 this morning, and then around 11 o'clock, there were 20 spots open.
So, thank you, Tim. Ben?
The ordinance committee is going to try and meet again on Thursday for the start of a regular set of meetings.
That'll be exciting.
We're addressing the nuisance ordinance.
I cannot wait to see what you guys produce. And as I've told you before, I really appreciate your work in regards to making our ordinances more efficient, more clean, kicking out the 1953 law about comic books. Things like that are really important to make our code book much more efficient and much more user-friendly. So, Nicole?
I had someone call me today, coincidentally, about ordinances. I don't know the ordinance number, and he didn't, mm-hmm. but it's to clean up his property, basically. And he's from in the Swihart Street area. And I'm just saying this to, mm-hmm. you know, but he said the Swihart area wants to be left alone and let them have their stuff.
Okay.
And he wants me to vehemently defend that. And maybe someday I can, but I told him I need to look into it and, you know, be able to find out what the ordinance is and what's going on. And I told him the ordinance committee is meeting and they're looking into ordinances like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
And if I can mention, I know I can direct you to at least one person on Swihart Street that absolutely loves what we're doing with the properties. Because
he said nobody complains, and I said yes, they do.
Yeah, there is at least one person on Swihart Street that consistently complains about the properties around him.
So I told him that.
Yeah.
And so he wants me to come there and like talk to everybody, and I said when the weather clears up, I'd be glad to do that.
Absolutely.
But.
And you know what? If they feel like it would be beneficial, maybe we could even have a neighborhood meeting. I would welcome that opportunity.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think Tim would love to show up to that too.
Okay. So, okay. Well, he thinks we have too many police too.
Oh.
Does.
Well, then he's really going to be upset now that we have one.
No, we have one more. That's what I was thinking.
Which, by the way, is a replacement of one that left, just
I
for
know,
the record. So we're back to where we were
a
year
man.
Ago.
He was a very nice man, very cordial.
Yeah, appreciate that.
So I did want to just mention it and need to look into it.
And different neighborhoods obviously have different thought patterns, and we understand that. So I'm perfectly fine with having a conversation on that.
Right.
Okay. Bill.
Nobody from my district wants to succeed, so we're okay.
Succeed, yeah. Yeah.
I have nothing.
Okay. Any other things from the audience?
Just as a member of the Whitley County Patriots and as one of their people who is the Second Amendment, very pro, what is your position on gun control within Columbia City, Indiana? Mm-hmm.
I guess if you're asking
your mayor's
me specific, yes, I do want to make it clear that I got a letter from the mayor's group that I think you're talking about that's led by Mayor Bloomberg that went out to mayors across out to mayors across the country. I'm not a part of that group. I think that this I got personally. I think the Second Amendment is something that's very, very closely held dear to individuals in our community. I don't think it's something that their mayor would want them to take part in. I have personal beliefs about, the overreach of gun control, but I'd love to talk about them in person. But as mayor of the city, I don't have any interest in additional gun control laws, personally.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Okay, then we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.